Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is JJ, the CEO of AquaBattery. On this show, we've discussed the necessity for energy storage already more than once. With rising renewable energy production, we of course need storage solutions. And not just battery for short-term storage, but also long-term storage. This is what AquaBattery does. Large-scale energy storage that is affordable, sustainable, and completely safe by storing energy in table salt and water. We'll learn more about how this works in just a second. Welcome, JJ.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure to be on the show. I wanted to go on the show for a while, and this pristine recording you do. So looking forward.
Yeah, well, thanks for being here. As with all my other guests, my first question is always, who are you as a person? So over to you. Who are you, JJ?
So I am an engineer turned entrepreneur. So I headed out doing chemical engineering, first in Delft, at Delft University of Technology, later doing my PhD at Imperial College. And I'm very much a risk taker, but a calculated risk taker. I don't just do things and hope for the best. I always want to know what are the challenges, what is the downside if things don't go as planned. And I also have a never giving up attitude. And I think that displays very well with running marathons. I love running marathons.
Really?
Full one so far. And I enjoy the moment.
Interesting. Seems to be a sort of a passion that both VCs and startup founders have to go running. I don't understand the hype, but maybe you can enlighten me. What sort of makes you go for the marathon? Is it the challenge of sort of suffering through the distance and then getting to the end, or what is it for you?
I think for most who just started running, it's the suffering, or maybe the kick that at some point you can put on your name, you have run a marathon. But truth be told, if you've done it several times, you realize that it's a journey. So the first time you might just struggle through and you barely make it. At some point, you're more focused on the time, how quick can you do it? And later, and then actually the phase that I was more focused on energy. So how can I make sure that throughout the time I'm running the whole marathon, I have the same level of energy? And then you need to time your moment of drinking water. You need to time your moment of taking food to make sure that you can keep going. So it's also helps me to better understand my body. So where can I push the limits, and where do I need to make sure that, you know, it's properly taken care of, and my body can keep going. So it's also planning, as it was a little bit of strategy behind.
Right. And maybe this is even a connection to startup life, because you said you're a calculated risk taker. And I guess then that applies both to the marathon, to sort of push as much as you can, but not too much, in order to sort of make sure that you actually can finish the race in at the quickest time possible. But then also startup life in general is very similar, right? Like you push as much as you can, but you still need to make sure that you take in the resources at the right time, to make sure that, you know, you have the right people in place, the tech is developed in the right place, and so on. Do you see the similarity there?
I think there's a lot of similarities. If I look at establishing and running AquaBattery, there are lots of high highs and a lot of low lows. And the lows, sometimes even my co-founder would think, oh, there's no way forward, and we need to stop. But then if you push through and you have done your work and your strategy, one of your strategies works out, then you can keep going. And it's always been a challenge. And sometimes the low lows also impact you personally, emotionally, quite a bit. And that's also what I hear from my other peers who have been running quite successful startups, but also experienced the journey. And some of them even exited, but then they told me, you know, the best part was the journey. It's not, you know, having golden handcuffs and having proper exit, but the journey. So having all those ups and downs.
Yeah, right. Just sort of before we started recording, we talked about roller coasters as well. And I think this is even similar, right? Like you might not enjoy the wait, and you might not it, like you might be proud of that you actually did the ride on, you know, maybe a super high roller coaster, one with many loops and so on. But it's actually the ride that counts more than sort of the process before and afterwards, which is really interesting. I guess also again a metaphor for startup life.
Yeah, but what is important is when you are the high, don't forget the lows, and when you're the low, don't you know, aim at the high, and of the, you will make it. Let's keep
Right.
going. That's also maybe part of what I just said. You know, I have a never giving up attitude. You just keep going, and if the company goes down because of me, then yeah, I've done it. At least I did my best.
Well, this is already a very sort of meta entry to today's recording, which I love. Super insightful. Let's get back to Aqua Battery. So I mentioned before, long duration energy storage. Tell me, what is it that Aqua Battery does, and what do you do differently from, you know, the tech that's out there?
Okay, so Aqua Battery, it's a company name, but at the same time also a product name. Aqua Battery is a so-called flow battery. As the name already gives it away, we store energy using fluids. And in our case, we have chosen for a quite special one, and we all have that, and that is water and table salt. So that makes it inherently safe. It's also sustainable, and you can have access to it everywhere. The water and salt can be converted into chemicals that has a slightly higher energy content. And we use that, we make those converters. And in fact, we call the converters a power module. So it converts power. The more power you need, the bigger your power module needs to be. And the more energy you want to store, the bigger the water tanks need to be, because the volume of water is similar to how much energy you can store. So inside the power module, where the energy conversion happens, you'll find membrane stacks. And these are literally a whole bunch of specialized polymer layers stacked on top of each other. When you do charging, salt water flows along these membranes, and you make salt water into slightly acidic water, so pH lower than 7, and slightly base water, pH above 7. And there's where the energy is stored. Energy will not get lost over time, because these two streams will be stored in separate tanks, and they do not interact with each other. So that means if you leave it out there for a week, a month, the energy content is still there. And to the moment you discharge, and that is using the same power module, same membrane stack, you flow the acid and base through the membrane stack, you make salt water and electricity. This solution is circular, inherently safe, because there's no risk of explosion or fire. And it's also indefinitely scalable, using abundantly locally available resources. You can get salt water anywhere, and you just need a tank to store that water. So the vision of the company is we really believe in a net zero world, where we do not need fossil fuels to power most of our, even, you know, we don't need fossil fuels to power our electricity or our power needs. But there is still a long way going there. And with our solutions, we want to empower, you know, the world going towards net zero.
Right. How did you land on that approach? I mean, a lot of attention focuses on batteries now, I would say, instead of in the energy storage game. But then there's also a number of other approaches, especially in the long duration energy storage place. So for example, there's companies that use CO2 to store energy, or a sort of compressed air and so on. But then using water together with table salt seems incredibly simple on the one hand, compared to, you know, batteries, is you mentioned the risk of explosion and so on, fire hazards and so on. So it seems very, yeah, well, very easy, very straightforward for you. So how did you land on that, and why does no one else do it the way you do?
Well, flow battery concept is not new. It's been there for a long time. The first one is developed in the 1960s for NASA, but that's vanadium redox flow battery. So vanadium redox flow batteries are the most well-developed ones, and there are big installations out there. And so that's not a very new concept. What's new is that the use of water and table salt. And there, that comes from when we are looking at treating water. So when you desalinate water, you want to get the salt out, and you can use membrane technology for that. And when our team was looking at that and said, okay, you can do that using energy. Can you also do reverse of it? And most of the chemical processes are actually reversible in a way or another. So yeah, if you can use energy to make new molecules, and the molecules can later be converted into electricity, that is a battery. So that is how we started. But I think the challenge of the energy transition to renewables is so big. We need all kinds of solutions. So the most famous one and the well-known one is pumped hydro, where you literally pump water to a higher elevation, and later when you need the energy out, you basically flow it down. That is something that's it's been applied. A lot of people are working more on the intercalation type of battery. Think of lithium-ion, but also sodium-ion nowadays. So I think there's a whole range of storage solutions needed. But what we've particularly focused on is the battery that makes sense. So in our case, it makes more sense to focus on so-called long duration. So there's not really a sharp definition, but most of the experts would agree, you know, around 8 hours and beyond, we'll be speaking about long duration energy storage. And there we see our leverage. So if a lot of industrial and commercial companies are having targets or having the ambition to become more sustainable, typically they are looking at solar PV because they are now so cheap to install.
Right.
In some places, in particular here where I am located, the Netherlands, and where the company is also located, you see that some of the companies cannot get a stronger grid connection so that they can deliver the peak power back to the grid. And also the energy companies are more now are nowadays charging for you know, receiving your power because it's becoming undesired. There's so much influx of power at certain moments that the whole grid system becomes, you know, not really stable, unstable. So you need to buffer that and make and to make sure our energy system does not break down. And there we see, you know, long duration energy storage, 8 hours, 16 hours, maybe even, you know, 24 plus, that will be a logical solution where we all be shifting towards. So the smaller systems, typically lithium or sodium, they're based, they are very good for, let's say, 2, 4, perhaps 6 hours. At some point, it become quite uneconomical because you need to add more cells in order to achieve these longer duration. In our case, achieving longer duration means, you know, choosing a bigger water tank. You can even add it at a later moment. Let's say you build one system today, your whole energy system only needs, let's say, 10 hours of storage.
Right.
And later you need 16 because, you know, you have more solar panels installed. Just add another tank, and that makes it simple.
And actually sort of easily scalable as you go along, right? You don't need to go for sort of the big risk and the big investment right away. You can sort of build the systems that really match your needs.
We can build system phases. That's why I also mentioned the power module is literally a module. It's like a building block. So if you want more, you can just add more. You want more storage, more hours, that you can just add a bigger water tank.
Gotcha. I mean, we just talked about, you know, PV storing that electricity. Then, what are typical applications for your tech? So, what kind of clients are interested in your solutions?
So we as a company, we focus on two main applications. So one of them is what we call behind the meter service. So what it is usually helping consumers to increase their self-consumption. And that means self-consumption of self-generated either PV or solar power. So for example, think of industrial commercial companies. They have space to put solar panels, and they also have space to put a battery, like an Aqua battery. What now happens is that they request a stronger grid connection so that during the day, the midday, when you have a peak power production from solar, they can deliver back. But what you can also can do is, you know, store locally and use that energy during the night. You, in that case, need a smaller grid connection that saves cost. At the same time, you will also be cutting costs of transport tariffs. So not sure how transport tariffs in your country works, but in Netherlands, receiving and giving, you also pay transport fee, and that is at some point becoming expensive. So having a local battery that can, behind a meter, what the word already says, use and produce and use within the small bubble is at some point more economical. The other big
Especially when you
thing.
think about sort of the applications that we, I guess, you also see more and more with negative electricity prices, because that could be quite a smart use case for you as well, right? When you store the excess electricity, not just from your own self-consumption or self-production, but then even from the grid to sort of offer that buffer services, and then you literally get you're being paid to store the electricity, and then can use it at a later time when prices are higher. That must be something that's really interesting for your customers.
Totally. That's the second application. So it's in our view a bit larger scale. So industrial commercial companies, some of them are not very big. So typically in a system of 50 to 100 kilowatts, 10-hour system is already enough. And then what you're mentioning, it's more on the larger scale where you have literally solar and wind parks that produce megawatt hours. And there we call it buffering at the source. So you want to be, have a stable supply at the source. So you need to store energy there. Otherwise, you have, indeed have sometimes negative electricity prices because they're so the whole grid's flooded with cheap renewable energy, and nobody wants it. So that is something we'll be focused on later because you require systems that are significant in size. Right, so at least a megawatts plus. Otherwise, people do not include you because it's it's like a drop of on a hot plate. It's nothing happens. So those are the two main applications. But it's currently at this moment we're more focusing on the former. So really, commercial and industrial companies.
Gotcha. And where are your customers? Are they right now in the Netherlands, or are they already across Europe or the globe?
We see requests across Europe. The Netherlands, of course, because we are a Dutch company, we also have quite a few communication in
Sure.
Dutch. We also attract quite a few people coming by. What I always tell them is to understand, what is your needs? Because it seems like energy storage is also becoming in hype, or maybe it's already in hype. People hear about it and want to have it. But some of the customers do not even know if they have a need. And
Right.
some of them are more pressured by either policies or from the top. So the boss say, we need storage, and then they look into it. And I think the market is also not very well educated. Is if you've been you do not know the technology, you've been asked to look into storage, you would end up at lithium ion batteries because that is what is
That's,
the
I think, where my question earlier came from, right? Like, sort of the batteries, and especially lithium ion, are sort of the household name. I think also with the
standards.
electrification of transportation, especially EVs, everyone knows that now, and sort of that has become the norm of what we think energy storage is. But then the question is sort of, there's so much more out there, right? It's not just the battery that's in your EV. And even there, we see changes of moving away from lithium ion to it needs to make sense for your business, your situation, your geography, and so on.
Exactly. So there need to be a business case, and sometimes business case is not right, and that's something we tell the customer. You perhaps it's better for you to buy a lithium battery because in your case it doesn't make sense.
Right.
So we are very specific by saying, we do systems that are at least you need 10 hours of storage. Otherwise, it doesn't really make sense because in our case the energy storage is quite low cost. We just need a water tank and some salt water, and that is what you want to focus on.
Gotcha. So to summarize, you have a lot of interest, and customers are in the Netherlands and then
Yes.
across Europe, because you don't need the specifics of, for example, or you only need water and salt, to make your tech work.
We want to make sure that the product will be offered to the world. So of course, because we're in the Netherlands, we're still developing, it's just better to have installations in the neighborhood because new installations always need some checking and some maintenance frequently. We want to be having access and easy access to those sites. So that's why we started in the Netherlands, and that's why we're also collecting data around our neighborhood and to see, who are the typical archetypes companies that needs our product. But we're also looking further. But what we see is also a lot of demands actually from Southern Europe. Think of so Spain, for example, Italy. There's a lot of demand from those sites because there the grid is typically less stable than the Netherlands. The Netherlands, we have a quite good grid. Still, we're complaining about a lot of things, but the grid here is good. But then imagine when you have a typical weaker grid, you need storage sooner.
And I guess, I mean, the grid is the one side of the problem, or you could also say, the countries that you mentioned, they probably have an even higher share than of renewable production. I mean, the Netherlands also have quite a bit of wind power, but Spain and Italy have a lot of PV during the day. But then, sort of, the case for storage becomes even more important as we sort of then say, look, that balance, if we want to achieve a fully renewable system, to balance that throughout the night or not sunny days, this is where long duration storage comes in.
Yeah, that's right. I believe you need to look at the entire system and not only focus on one point solution because it's a bigger picture that you need to understand. And you're right by pointing out that you go more south, Spain, Italy, you have more sun hours, and that means also the challenge will be bigger and the need for storage will be bigger.
We discussed the USPs of your tech already a bit, but maybe you can summarize them once more for our listeners. From my point of view, tell me if I'm right. So I think the first one is sort of the simplicity of it, that it's only water and salt compared to, you don't have the question of raw materials, and with that, even supply chain issues of and the dangers that we've seen across the globe now with, if you need to source one particular raw material for your tech, well, you might be under scrutiny because of dependency on, and global challenges. So that's one for me. The other one that I think you mentioned very well is the scalability. So if you want to start sort of with 10 hours of storage, and then you might realize later on you need actually 16, that it's easy to expand the system, and you don't need to have that consideration fully done by the time you purchase the first system, which I think makes it easier for people to invest actually into storage, and for your customers to gain that trust that it actually works, it's exactly what we need, and then if it works as we want, we're happy to expand, and maybe we'll increase renewable production hour, and so then we also need more storage. So I think that's very smart. And I think the safety, probably sustainability of it, that no harmful chemicals are being used. It's a very well proven concept. You mentioned the 1960s for the flow batteries as the original starting point almost. And now we're in the 2020s. So there's been a lot of research being done. People trust the approach, and well, as you again, you only use water and salt. No harmful chemicals can be re released to the environment. Did I get that right?
Yes, 100%. Adding to the safety aspect, we see that a lot of clients also sometimes in the Netherlands, particularly, struggle with getting permits due to the regulations. So, if you want to install a lithium-ion battery, you need to have drawings, you need to apply for permits, and you do not get that easily because there's some fire and explosion hazards. If you only store water, that is, with at least in the Netherlands, you just need to make sure that the government knows you're storing so much water there. So it's much easier procedure to apply for permits.
Smart.
And
It's
this,
actually a good point. The fire hazard has been an issue that, especially in the
yeah.
media, has been reported over and over again. You might remember the reporting on sort of EVs being transported from I guess often China to and sometimes the US to Europe, and then starting to burn on the ships, and how do you actually
Yeah, indeed.
extinguish the fires and so like, even if the risk, because you said it's you're a calculated risk taker, even if the risk might be relatively low, I think from a permitting point of view, people don't care because they are not calculated risk takers. They sort of have a very, very low tolerance, or you could say a zero tolerance for risk. So they're sort of saying only, it's water that we're going to store here. We'll make your lives and your customers' lives a whole lot of easier.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Actually, people are, a lot of insurances are scared away because of these events. They don't want to insure lithium-ion batteries anymore.
Right.
And that makes it challenging for some of the customers to make a decision, right? They want to purchase a battery, but at the same time, my building is not getting insured anymore. Well, then let's not do it. So that also puts people off.
Good point. I'm going to move us on away from then the USPs. I'm happy that I got them right. Check on and shoulder
Well
pat on
done.
for myself. Thank you. You not too long ago raised some money, which probably might have been a, an extensive undertaking as raising money always is. So maybe you can shine a bit of light on that. And then also, what are you going to use the money for?
Yeah, okay. So Aqua Battery, the whole idea was quite a long time ago that we had so the spark and wanted to build something. It was in 2014 that we had this idea. So it's 10 years. And in that 10 years, we were on and off doing R&D. So it's mostly on research focus, getting data, doing things in the lab. But about 2 years ago, we realized, okay, we've done R&D. We know the system's good enough. Now it's time to scale. So we start planning for a funding round. We call it a seed round. It's the first round. And you're right pointing out that it's not an easy undertaking. It involves speaking to a lot of people. I recently looked through my list. I think I've spoken to more than 150 different parties. To eventually close the round. And even when you start to say we are closing, still a lot of things can happen and you change the course. But I'm glad that the people, our investors believe in us and our products and see the added value to the world and decided to invest in Aqua Battery. So we raised 6 million, and with the money, we want to finalize the product. As I said, we took the time to really do a lot of R&D, but that means you have a lot of pieces of information and technology here and there. You need to turn that into a product that is, in terms of quality and price, good enough to start with. And then, of course, you want to have lower the price eventually to be, make it attractive and competitive to other parties. But the first step is, getting the product done. So one of the things we'll be using the money for is to finalize the product. And then, you also need to be able to make it. And that involves getting the organization ready, having a small scale production line where we can, I think one of the most important thing is learn how to set it up. It will not be fully automatic in the beginning. It will be involving hands-on, building some parts and maybe automatic doing some of the other processes. But eventually we want to have a small production line that can help deliver the first installations. And then, of course, what is really most important to scaling is captivate demand before you scale. So you need to make sure you have customers who want to buy. So that also involves building a sales pipeline. And there, I'm at a Spark the other day, and we and that also resulted in what Aqua Battery currently have. So there were quite a few people we're speaking with, and they want to see the technology working, and then they want to purchase a small system. But we are like, I'm not too interested in building five, six, seven small systems because first, these systems are not competitive. They are small scale, and it takes our resources away. So why don't we, bundle our forces and just, make one? So eventually, we are now working with five, six different parties to for a pilot installation that they share, and we will share knowledge. And there, we want to help them make a decision. So it's not about, the system ticks all the boxes. Here, we buy a bigger one. But I want to help them understand, okay, for your particular use case, these are the numbers, and we can want to show them based on the performance of this battery now and the performance we are going towards, this is your business case. So that is how we want to captivate demand. And I'm proud to come up with this idea and able to get it off the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess, smart for everyone involved to pool the risk, right? Going back to the calculated risk taker, instead of doing the same approach almost five to six times, and that will take quite some time for you. As you also mentioned, you know, the systems in the beginning have or need more attention. So it's not just, you know, that it's serious production for those six ones, but they each need a whole lot of attention then to just to do it once then for everyone involved. Everyone can learn. Yeah. And then from there, you can fully scale and sort of showcase that to the world.
Yeah, indeed. But there, I'm so glad to have a good team to help me, because you also need to pull a lot of information from them, because you need your potential customer to tell you, okay, this is what I find important, and list those. Only with a full list of what the expectations are, you can actually come up with a solution. And this is, it turns out to be a good solution.
Yeah. And I think it also helps for you to play this very openly, and then your partners to be very honest about what they need and to say, look, you might need this, and you know, this might be your need right now, but actually I think this is the better approach for everyone involved, and for everyone to be that flexible and that trusting to say, yeah, right, that's the good approach, let's go for that. I think it's a very smart approach, and showcases also I think that you have the right partners by your side then.
I think there's also a win-win situation, because by building one installation instead of five, also cuts their costs. They don't have to, you know, pay a lot of money up front, only a small amount, and we can deliver and show what is important to their use case.
Yeah, and I guess it's also a lot faster for everyone involved, right? Like, I mean, maybe not the first one, but if you're second, third, or fourth in line to get the system, you know, now you're getting to the finish line faster.
Yeah, that's correct.
So, I mean, you already painted the picture a bit on what's next for you. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on, sort of the immediate next steps for Aqua Battery? You said scaling up, you know, that system, I think, will be the main focus for you in the upcoming weeks and months. What else is there?
Yeah, so the three things I mentioned, my finalized product, have a small production line, and then build a sales pipeline, is preparing the company for the next fundraise, because as most startups, we're not there with just one round. There will be more to actually get us to a profitable company. And so the next for us will be developing a serious pipeline, have those things ready to raise a Series A. And we want to have a serious amount that we raise to build what I call the first factory / logistical center, because that is also a concept I have in mind. So I want to develop a blueprint of a factory. So how should the factory look like? But at the same time, that factory should also have enough parts and logistically very well connected to parties in the neighborhood that can help us deliver and maintain the battery. So the first trial probably will be the Netherlands. So we'll build a factory / logistical center in the Netherlands and set things up. And there we learn. So once we have learned that, we put that in what I call blueprint. And the idea is then have this copied worldwide. So have one in another country, let's say India, maybe even the Middle East. And then we can really scale, because we really want to bring this solution to the world.
Yep.
Right? We want to empower net zero. And that only, you can only do that if you are fast enough and you can deliver to the world, and not only focus on a small area.
And so, if you do it in the standardized way, right? Like, you can't reinvent the wheel every time. And going back to what you mentioned earlier about the original concept, you know, that the concept was around now for 60 years. We don't have those 60 years. We need to do it now.
Indeed. And even if we are succeeding to do the full transition, I think we need a much more. So everybody needs to get to work and get this going. But for us, will be the first step to have that blueprint and make sure that we can scale worldwide. And then I think we need more funding to actually execute. But our idea is to deliver the first commercial batteries in 2026, and then onwards scaling it exponentially. And that is what we currently have in mind.
Yeah. So if we're looking 3 to 5 years ahead, the first commercial battery will be live. And I guess from there on, you know, 5 years from now, international expansion has at least started.
Yes, for sure. So having a product, modular, is important, scalable, and then building a factory that can deliver this and have that as a blueprint here in the Netherlands, perhaps in Europe if the Netherlands doesn't make sense, and later worldwide.
Sweet. Towards the end of our conversation, I always ask my guests, you know, we start with a personal journey and we'll end with a personal journey. Something that you said earlier stuck with me, which is that you developed the sort of the plan and the idea, the tech behind Aquabattery for almost 10 years now, right? You said you started in 2014, and then 2 years ago you decided we're ready to build this as a company. And that even maybe goes back to you running marathons. That's a very long time, and you need to be persistent. You need to keep going. You can't give up. So what is it that actually kept you going throughout those 10 years and make you get up every morning to say, look, today I'm going to spend all my time and energy to develop that concept further, ultimately now building the company. What is it that keeps you going?
So what keeps me going? That's a good question. I think every time when the company grows a little bit, there are new challenges, and I'm very up for those challenges, and I learn and I want to tackle them, and that keeps me going. And I think when you try to build startups and you go to these accelerated programs, all of them, maybe all of them, will tell you the first thing you need to have is a shared vision. And I, you know, ideal picture where you're going to it, and you know, with all your energy and team. I didn't believe that in the beginning, but at some point when you actually do that, and we're now 10 years in, that's actually what kept me going. I wanted to, I have this picture that I was telling you just about, so clear in my mind that I just wanted to happen. I just don't want, you know, the whole idea that's built now in my mind to go waste it. I want to have that realized. So that really keeps me going. And well, but when you ask, well, what wakes me up? I have the pleasure of two young boys waking me up early in the morning every day. Yeah,
The natural alarm clocks, huh?
indeed, natural around the clock. But yeah, so indeed, the vision kept me going. But I also saw the last decade a massive change in the world. So much that I think my parents wouldn't have predicted it. And personally, I'm very curious to see, you know, what kind of change the world will undergo in the next 10 years. And what part of that is my contribution?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting and insightful reflection to say, look, the rate of change has increased even further over the last decade. And what if we can continue or accelerate that momentum towards good? How much will that do? I always cite the examples of, solar PV and electric cars on the roads. 10 years ago, I think this was the first time that I think the first EV that I ever drove was in 2012, a Renault, I think they're called Twizy. They were used in Germany for delivering pizzas because they didn't have real windows. It was a one seater, so like one seat in the car.
Very limited range, probably.
Very limited range, I think what 50 kilometers or so, but perfect for urban applications. But that was the first time, and I remember for the first time sitting in the car and driving and feeling the acceleration was like, whoa, that's different. And similar for rooftop PV, it's been around for decades now, but only over the last decade that has really been taking off. And now you can see the numbers really growing exponentially. You can feel that change. And I think just that moment to keep pressing the gas there, if we want to stay with the analogy of the car, and hitting that change and bringing that so we can all live in a more sustainable world. I think it's really going to be interesting to see what you with Aquabattery and we all together can achieve.
Wonderful. Thank you.
What a note to end us on, JJ. It was lovely talking to you. I loved the conversation, really insightful, and what a journey from running marathons to learning more about the tech and then hearing your vision for scaling up the company. All the best, fingers crossed, and I'll hope to speak to you soon again.
Indeed, it's a very enjoyable podcast. So thank you so much for inviting me and sharing those lovely questions.
All the best. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.